welcome to another edition of San Luis Valley Voices, a production of slvoices.com, the voice of the San Luis Valley. Without further ado, enjoy the program.
Sponsorship of this program was provided in part by...
No doubt you've been hearing a lot about essential oils and may even be using some in your home, but if you don't truly know how oils are graded and marketed and which ones may be for aromatic or topical use only, you may be doing yourself a disservice. There's a lot more to know about essential oils, such as their level of purity, their grade, proper growing, harvesting, and distillation processes, as well as how to properly use them. I'm ready to help you learn all of this and more. You too can have access to the absolute best essential oils on the planet. Go to wildist.com/Tara Halenza. That's wildist.com/Tara, Halenza.
In the studio with us is Jay Young, general manager of the Colorado Gators Reptile Park and heir to the throne.
Well, my parents started the alligator farm, as most of the locals know it, and they still own it, but my wife and I manage it, so...
Okay, I was going to ask, let's start with the history of the park, Jay. I mean, from post-Texas to Alamosa, Colorado, how in the world did you end up here in the first place?
Well, my dad's an engineer, and he was living in post-Texas and doing engineering contracts all over Texas, New Mexico, Colorado. And his hobby was growing fish. And he found out about tilapia, an African cichlid he was the first one in the United States to actually grow tilapia in 1962. And was growing them in West Texas, but they're tropical and they would die every winter. So he was doing some engineering contracts here in the San Luis Valley and found out about the geothermal wells. He decided to pack up and move us to Colorado.
Oh my goodness. And growing up, what did you think of this venture your parents were embarking on?
Well, I have to admit I was born in Texas, but I was smart enough to move to Colorado when I was 6 months old. I didn't think much about it because I was 6 months old. It was, you know, a decision they made before I had a vote in it. But in 1974, we moved to the San Luis Valley. And in 1977, he was able to purchase the property where we currently have Colorado Gators. And the tilapia farm is still there. It's the oldest running tilapia farm in North or South America.
Really?
Yep. Wow. 41 years now.
And with three other siblings, I mean, how did you end up being the general manager?
Well, it was not very exciting growing up on a tilapia farm, let me tell you. It was a lot of hard work, slimy, smelly fish, and just not a lot of fun. We were all, you know, of course, had to work for our meal. Dad taught us well the value of hard work. And so my brothers and sister are all older than me and had moved away long before we had the alligators. My mom kept caiman as pets before that. In fact, I got my first bite when I was 5 years old. Caiman are very fast, little aggressive crocodilians from South America. Not as big as alligators, but very dangerous. So I liked the caiman, and then we got the alligators. But like I said, my siblings had already moved away and were doing their own thing by that point. And so I kind of grew up with the alligators, and I moved away for a while too because we weren't open to the public, and it was still mostly a fish farm that had alligators. Now, when we opened up to the public, people found out we had the alligators. They wanted to see them. In fact, we tried to keep it quiet for a while, and that didn't work. All the locals heard about it and were coming out to see them. So eventually opened up to the public, and then people started dropping off their pet alligators, and we became a rescue. They started bringing their pet iguanas and pythons and monitor lizards and tortoises, and we had to learn how to take care of all these things that were left on the doorstep. So we started expanding and building reptile habitats and became a rescue operation. Now we get unwanted alligators or confiscated alligators from as far away as New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles. We got a dozen from Los Angeles alone last year.
Oh, my.
That were confiscations as illegal pets. And we got one from Pueblo the other day. And that's what we continue to do is we're primarily reptile rescue and education now. Over 200 of our alligators are rescues.
Well, obviously the alligators are one of the biggest attractions you have. Can you tell me about the different types that are there that people can see?
Well, we still have some of our original alligators that we got in 1987. And my parents got those originally just to be garbage disposals for the fish farm.
Oh.
They were our pets and they were garbage disposals to eat dead fish. Because when you grow hundreds of thousands of fish, some of them are going to die before you are able to sell them.
Mm-hmm.
And back then we were filleting tilapia. and selling the fillets and throwing the carcasses to the alligators. Mm-hmm. And so that's how that started. And some of those original alligators, Elvis is now 12 feet and about 600 pounds. Some of the rescues we've taken in, Morris actually came from Hollywood. They couldn't handle him out there anymore. He lived there for 30 years. He did movies like Happy Gilmore, Dr. Dolittle 2, Interview with a Vampire, Eraser, Blues Brothers 2000, Alligator 1 and Alligator 2. So he did movies for 30 years, very famous alligator. And if you jump in there, he's more than happy to give you his autograph. Put your arm down by the water. If you still have your arm, you'll have his autograph.
Right. How long do they typically live?
They can live 60 to 90 years.
Oh, wow.
And they keep growing the whole time. Morris's estimated age is 60 years. We don't know for sure, but he was 9 foot long when they got him in 1975. And so he's estimated to be 60 years old. He's our oldest, but not our biggest. Mm-hmm. Now, our biggest rescue is Bruce Almighty. Came from Idaho, actually, from a fish farm there that was similar to ours, using him as a garbage disposal. He is nearly 13 feet and 900 pounds.
Oh, my goodness. And people can actually come out and feed the alligators there?
Definitely, yes. We go through about 4 to 5 tons of gator chow each year to supplement, because we don't kill enough fish to feed 300 alligators. Mm-hmm. We have to supplement their diet with a pelleted food. And so we actually let the visitors buy that food and feed the alligators for us. And kids obviously love that.
Wow. And just how dangerous are these creatures?
Oh, extremely dangerous. I mean, they can tear you in half.
Oh, my goodness.
Bruce would be happy to, but as long as you stay on your side of the fence, you'll probably be okay.
Well, what else can people see there when they visit?
We have Nile crocodiles, Morlett's crocodiles. We have albino alligators, and those I actually had to buy.
Oh.
They're not rescues.
They're a fascinating color, too. They really are.
Yeah, almost pure white, pink eyes. There's only about 100 albino alligators in the world, and we have 3 of them. Hopefully, we'll get some babies from them. Hopefully, we built a bigger habitat this year, and they're breeding and acting like they want a nest, but we didn't get any eggs this year, so hopefully this coming year we'll get albino alligator eggs.
And you said you're also basically a sanctuary for unwanted exotic pets. How are you ending up with these things?
Well, a lot of people in the big cities buy things in exotic pet stores that they probably shouldn't own as pets. And the pet stores sell them, not necessarily telling people what they're getting into. And some people know what they're getting into, but life happens. Kids go away to college, and we end up with animals. The alligator we got recently was from a house where the tenant was evicted, and they left behind an alligator in an aquarium. You know, people get shipped off to Iraq and Afghanistan, we end up with animals. People get a reticulated python. It was a really cool thing when they were a teenager or in college, but then they get married and have kids, and obviously pythons can eat small children, and so they have to get rid of the python. That's the most dangerous animal we have, actually, is the 17-foot reticulated python.
He's massive, yeah.
Yeah. The diamondbacks obviously are dangerous. The big alligators are dangerous. The Nile crocodiles are dangerous. But that big python gets a hold of you and you don't have somebody to unwrap it, you've got about 3 minutes to live.
Wow.
So, and there was somebody's pet over in Canyon City that we picked up 4 years ago now.
Oh, my goodness. You use every system possible in conjunction with other systems within the Gator Park itself. I mean, your website says that you're a family-oriented education facility that focuses on full use of natural and recycled resources, and your goal is to maintain an integrated ecosystem while providing educational opportunities and viable farm products. What does that mean, Jay?
So that means we built the farm on a geothermal well. It's 87 degrees year-round. Mm-hmm. It goes through the fish farm, and then it goes through the alligator ponds and keeps them warm all winter long. And then we take some of the water out of that and pump it through a hydroponic system, aquaponics, that actually filters out some of the fish waste. And it also grows plants for the herbivores. So we grow food for the iguanas and the tortoises in that aquaponic system. We recycle anything we can. We recycle the dead fish by feeding them to alligators. We recycle the leftover food matter and tortoise poop by composting it and having, you know, food for the plants, for the greenhouse. So we recycle everything we can, even dead animals. If an alligator dies, we cut the skin off. We do have amateur leather workers that want to buy the skins sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't sell or process any alligators for food or boots or anything like that. But if an animal dies, we try to use everything. So we'll cut the skin off and we'll have that. And then we'll take the meat and we'll feed it to the other carnivores, the monitor lizards, the alligators. They'll all eat alligator meat. And then we save the skeletons and we'll bury them. And 2 years later, we can dig them up and we send skeletons to museums and colleges around the world.
Okay.
So we've got, we've got a 9-foot alligator skeleton in the Museum of Mexico City. The Museum of Science in Boston has one of our alligators. The Denver Museum in Denver has an 11-foot alligator skeleton.
Well, it leads me right into the next question. If you could talk about the educational opportunities that you're offering around the valley here.
At our facility, we try to be as educational as possible, but provide an experience as well that people can't get anywhere else. And so we actually let the kids hold small alligators and small snakes and pet the tortoises and feed the tortoises and learn about them and ask questions and stuff like that. We provide that hands-on learning experience. People can take pictures and get their certificate of bravery for holding a little alligator. That's a lot of fun. For the adults, we have an alligator wrestling class, actually, because, you know, people want to do this.
Seriously.
Other places, yeah.
I can go out and wrestle an alligator.
You can go out and wrestle an alligator. And sometimes it's people who need it for their job. We trained some of the staff for the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo recently that has some of our alligators there. We train animal control officers, but it's all sometimes it's just adrenaline junkies that they've been skydiving, they've been riding bulls, they want to do something, you know. But what they do, it's not just picking on the alligator for their entertainment or our fun. They help us do our work for the day. So alligators, they like to fight. They're not very nice, even to each other. Anywhere you have more than one alligator, you're going to have injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just a male and a female, will sometimes have injuries. As we go and catch the wounded alligators, we stitch them up, we give them medicine, antibiotics if necessary, ointment on minor wounds, or we move them from one place to another, you know, so they get to help us do our work for the day.
Okay.
If you come and take the alligator wrestling class, you get to learn a hands-on experience, how to handle alligators. It's the real deal. I mean, you can lose fingers if you do it wrong, and we don't tape their mouth shut for you or anything like that.
Wow.
We've never lost a finger, though. We've been able to find them and put them in little jars of formaldehyde in the gift shop, so they're not lost. We know where they are. There's only two in there.
One of those bucket list things.
It's a finger and a thumb. It is a bucket list thing for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I've had stage 4 cancer patients come and do it. I've had people with traumatic brain injuries in the past. It's fulfilling a dream for a lot of people, and that's what makes it really
phenomenal.
Fun for us. You know, I mean, when you have a stage 4 cancer patient that gets to fulfill this lifelong dream before they die. It's, I don't know. I can't even describe.
You're very heartwarming.
Right.
Okay.
Right. How that is. I'm here with tears in my eyes right now.
I understand. And you also travel, too. You go to schools and other places?
We do school programs. We take the animals to schools around the state and teach kids about the biology and the behavior of reptiles, but also which ones are good pets and which ones aren't. Some reptiles make great pets. Leopard geckos make great pets. They stay small. They're easy to care for, very hardy, and, you know, are good for kids of all ages. You know, my 3-year-old, he handles the leopard geckos all the time. Sulcata tortoises, not a great pet. They get huge. They have to stay warm year-round, so they have to live indoors. 9 months of the year, they can get over 300 pounds. This is the cheapest tortoise you can buy in an exotic pet store, but the most expensive to care for, and people don't realize. We've had several of the owners that have dropped them off that have said they knock over the entertainment center. They move the couch. They poop everywhere. They move the refrigerator. They just tear the house apart.
Oh my.
They're like little tanks in your home.
Right.
They're not a dangerous pet like the pythons and alligators we take in, but they're a huge responsibility. And so we show the kids which reptiles are good pets and which ones aren't. And that's what we do daily at the farm.
And you even have live fish available for sale?
We do. In fact, that's the only way we sell fish. We don't have a processing facility anymore. It's too difficult to compete on a fillet market or a dead fish market. We only sell whole fish live right from the tank, but you know they're fresh because they're still swimming. So we do sell tilapia at the farm. And we also ship fish to Texas to stock lakes as well for fishing and algae control.
Now, what about this scuba lagoon? When we were there, we saw this huge open pit in the fall. What's going on with that?
Well, it was a project I started about 6 years ago. Colorado's got more scuba divers per capita than any other state, and no good places to go scuba diving. Even to get certified, people from Denver, there's 8 dive shops in Denver that teach classes, sell equipment, book trips. But to certify people, they drive all the way to Santa Rosa, New Mexico, 8 hours away, to Blue Hole, to certify them.
Really?
Because there's no good places in Colorado. Most of the year, it's too cold, and when it's not too cold, it's too murky. And so Blue Hole is nice and crystal clear year-round. So I decided to build this scuba lagoon. It's 200 feet in diameter, 30 feet deep. I've been working on it for 6 years. I had it half full last year, but as you know, we had a severe drought.
Right.
This last winter.
Right, we did.
They're 30% snowpack. Our well runs on artesian flow, so it's whatever the pressure of the aquifer gives us. And it dropped so low that I couldn't keep water in the scuba lagoon and keep the fish and alligators alive. So, easy choice there.
Right,
I
got to
keep
right.
the fish and alligators alive and dried up the scuba lagoon.
Sure.
So, it may or may not happen. We may have to scale it down a little bit so that it doesn't take 2.3 million gallons to fill.
Oh, my. And you've got a GoFundMe or something going on with it, too?
We did. I mean, we haven't really promoted it recently. We pretty much had it done, but now that we had to dry it up, the sun has baked the liner and the wind has torn it up some, so we're going to have to do some repairs. Eventually, what I'd like to do is build a dome over the entire thing, though. One, to keep the sunlight out so the water stays clearer and warmer all winter long. I've got about $25,000 in it so far, and it'll take 50 more to do that. So I don't know how soon we'll get that done. But again, what good is it if we don't have the water to fill it? So
yeah, that's true.
Pray for snow.
So what else is in store for the future, Jay?
Well, we're always constantly changing and improving facilities. We're getting a zoological park license from Colorado Parks and Wildlife because we're obviously not just a fish farm anymore.
Right.
And we're not an alligator farm. We don't sell or process alligators. So we've basically become a zoo. And so we're going more towards that direction. We recently did a video where we took an alligator out of an icy pond because some of our ponds are further from the geothermal source than the others. In the summertime when the alligators are fighting, we move some of them to ponds for the summer, and then we have to move them back for the winter. They don't fight very much when they're colder in the wintertime. So we can pack them in tighter in the wintertime. And in the fall, we go and round up all these alligators and we move them to the warmer ponds. But there's always one or two that eludes us. And and when the pond freezes, then we go back and we find noses poking up through the ice. Now, alligators will live in places that freeze naturally. North and South Carolina, they get ice on the water. But in those places, the alligators poke their nose up through the ice and they just wait it out. And if it gets really cold, they could die.
Right.
Here, if we get 30 below tomorrow, then those alligators could die. If the ice gets to their brain and freezes their brain, they'll die.
Mm-hmm.
I've broken an alligator out of 3.5 inches of ice before. It was still alive.
Really?
But it wasn't down to her brain. I broke another one out of 1.5 inches of ice, but her head was at a different angle, and it froze her brain, and she died. We don't want to risk losing any alligators, of course.
Sure.
And so we go and break them out of the ice and move them in case we get a cold winter again someday. So we filmed this the other day, and our social media guy, Jason, put it out there, and the Daily Mail in the United Kingdom picked it up, and it went worldwide. And then weather.com, Weather Channel, picked it up, and it was the number one video on Weather Channel yesterday.
That is awesome.
And today it's on MSN. So we've always got stuff like that going on. We never know. We did film a show with Animal Planet last year that's going to air this coming spring sometime. Dr. Jeff, Rocky Mountain vet, came out and helped us stitch up an alligator. That'll be coming up in the future. And I should mention, we are open year-round. We have to be there taking care of all the animals every day anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of cool in the wintertime because, you know, it's not as crowded as the summertime. You were there on the free day. It was extremely crazy.
Oh, it was, but it was great. I mean, people are having a ball.
Yeah. In the wintertime, we'll have one or two groups, and it's, you know, you get to more personal attention. And it's neat to see the steam coming off the geothermal water, and the alligators will get out of the water and sunbathe on the snow, and it's very quiet and serene. And so it's cool in the wintertime, too. And we're there every day but Christmas. Well, we're there Christmas Day. We just don't open to the public. The animal, we got to feed the animals. They don't care if it's Christmas Day or not.
Right.
So, yeah, come out and visit. Visit us. Be happy to have you in the wintertime.
So you're also a part of the San Luis Valley Tourism Association. What's going on there?
I am. We've always recognized, and my parents have always played a big part in San Luis Valley tourism as well. If we all work together to promote tourism and to get people to the valley and tell them what else there is to do here, if we all work together, it will end up benefiting everyone. So the San Luis Valley Tourism Association promotes the San Luis Valley as a travel region as a whole and has been making great strides over the last few years in doing that. One of the things that we've been trying to do is get the Colorado Tourism Office to recognize the San Luis Valley as its own travel region. It used to be in a travel region called South Central Colorado, which we are in South Central Colorado, but it also included Pikes Peak and Royal Gorge, Arkansas Valley, and a lot of places that get more tourists than we do anyway. And San Luis Valley was just kind of, you know, left out. We've finally... After 20 years, got the San Luis Valley designated as its own travel region, which is very exciting to us.
That's a huge, that's an 8,000 square mile area.
Right. We're the size of Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the travel region's a little bit bigger than that. They also included Huerfano County in our region and Gunnison. San Luis Valley Tourism Association is now going to include Huerfano County and Gunnison County. But that's our travel region, and we're excited to have it.
Awesome. So, well, what's up with the Tourism Association? What are you guys focusing on?
Our main thing is printing the San Luis Valley map and brochure. Up until that point, you know, individual counties had some information and some maps, but there wasn't a valley-wide effort to show everything in the San Luis Valley. So that's our main project is the valley map and brochure. And we print 100,000 of those every year and put them in all the certified distribution racks. You know, when you go in a hotel in Lamar or Denver or wherever, you see a brochure rack full of brochures. And we started the Keep It Cool campaign because we're targeting people that are in hot climates. Even Pueblo is far warmer than we are. And Denver, you know, they get a lot of 100-degree days. People coming from Texas and Oklahoma or driving into eastern Colorado, they see these brochures, says Keep It Cool in the San Luis Valley, and they pick them up and they come and visit us. So that's our primary project. We also do some billboards in Denver. We do some ads. Oh, and that Keep It Cool map, we also put in over 240 brochure racks in the I-40 region around the south edge of the Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm. So people coming from California, Phoenix, Tucson that go to the Grand Canyon, they see these brochures as well. And we're only 10 hours from Phoenix and 40 degrees cooler most days or more.
Nice.
You know, and so in the summertime, this is a great getaway from Phoenix to come keep it cool in the San Luis Valley. But we also do some advertising in the Colorado State official visitor guide and Taos visitor guide, a few other guides, but basically just trying to get out there. We have a website, sanluisvalley.org, and any of the businesses that want to be listed on that website, go to it, check it out, and contact Kat. She's our president, doing a great job. She's also president of the San Luis Valley Museum Association. She's doing a phenomenal job for San Luis Valley tourism.
It's great to hear. And, so, and of course, we're working to be a part of all of that, too, and look forward to working with you guys and, of course, the Tourism Association going forward. Jay, anything else you'd like to say?
I'm doing some theater as well with the San Luis Valley Theater Company.
Really?
I did my first play earlier this year, How to Survive a Zombie Apocalypse. That was a lot of fun.
Sounds great.
And we're working on a play called Zoot Suits right now. It's a musical. I won't be dancing. I had knee surgery a couple months ago, but I have a small part in the Zoot Suits play. That's going on January 11th and 12th at Richardson Hall. I think you can go on the San Luis Valley Theater Company Facebook page to find out how to get tickets for that. And that's a nonprofit, just local theater company that pulls people out of the community and puts them in theater. It's really a lot of fun because none of us are professionals, but it's a lot of fun. So the San Luis Valley Tourism Association, we're having our annual conference February 21st, also at Adams State, where anybody in the valley who's involved with tourism can come and tell us what's going on in their area and what's new, as well as hear what's going on with the travel region and the Great Sand Dunes, and everybody's there in one place giving their yearly updates. It's February 21st. But we're also going to have a team-building exercise as part of that called How to Survive a Zombie Apocalypse. So
really?
They've asked us to put on that performance at the tourism conference.
Yeah, I'm we're looking forward to that.
It's a hoot, I tell you.
Well, listen, Jay, I want to thank you for stopping by the SL Voices studio here. We look forward to getting together again with you to learn even more about the Colorado Gators Reptile Park. Thank you, Jay.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
You can find out more about the Colorado Gators Reptile Park on their website, coloradogators.com. You can call them at 719-378-2612. That's 719-378-2612. Or pick up a free copy of the Colorado Gator Gazette at locations all over the San Luis Valley. They're located at 9162 County Road 9 North in Moscow, Colorado. Their winter hours are from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. daily. And if you haven't done so, plan a visit to the Colorado Gators Reptile Park. You'll be glad you did.
Sponsorship for the podcast you just heard was provided in part by...
The San Luis Valley is vast and beautiful. Its people so varied, vibrant, talented, and skilled that it's easy to miss really exciting events and local artisans of every type. Well, you don't ever have to miss an opportunity to enjoy all the events this area has to offer again. SL Voices is your one-stop shop for what's going on in the San Luis Valley, promoting local businesses, events, and organizations, as well as offering the most up-to-date and extensive events calendar for this entire region. Through posted information, podcasts, interviews, and more, we want everyone to quickly and easily be able to find out what's happening in and around the valley. Not just major events, but anything in your community that you'd like others to know about. SL Voices is a growing team of experienced voice talent available for commercials, voiceovers, trailers, short books, especially those written by local authors, or other audio recording needs you may have. Contact us today to learn about how we can help your business, organization, or event stand out. We can assist you in telling your story, which will help increase awareness and traffic to your particular event, business, or community activity.
We appreciate you telling your friends to listen to the podcast on slvoices.com and check out our extensive calendar of events, more listings in one location than any other website around. You can help spread the word, too, by liking us on Facebook and joining our page. Also, check out our Instagram page for behind-the-scenes looks at what we do. And please patronize our local sponsors. Remember to support the businesses here in the Valley. Most are owned and operated by your family, friends, and neighbors. We all love this area, want to see it flourish, and you can help by buying and supporting locally in your own and surrounding communities. Check back for another local podcast soon. Until then, this has been San Luis Valley Voices, a production of slvoices.com, the voice of the San Luis Valley.